Morning.
Good morning, Your Honors. Marco Garzon for the petitioner. May I please the court? In this case, this petition should be remanded to the board and the immigration judge because the agency determined that the government in Colombia was able and willing to protect the petitioners. The reason in this case is not so much as to the willingness of the authorities to protect their petitioners, but as to the actual ability of the authorities to protect this.
So, counsel, I want to be really, really careful here. So what is your burden here? What was your burden before the agency?
The burden was to demonstrate either that the government was unable or that the government was unwilling to protect the petitioners, Your Honor.
Okay.
That was our burden at the
And so does the government have to show that the Colombian government is able?
I think the burden for the government is to show either one.
Why is that their burden? I thought you just said this was your burden. I read the cases to say this is the burden that you have to show that the Colombian government is unable.
Yes, Your Honor. I think that the burden after we show that the government is unable to protect the petitioners, the burden shifts to the government to rebut that presumption, Your Honor. I think that's the approach that we have, and that's my understanding of this standard.
Okay. So what is the evidence that the Colombian government is unable?
Your Honor, yes. In the record, actually, this it's important to note that this case was remanded once to the immigration judge, and we had an opportunity to submit more documents and to supplement the record. As such, we submitted specific documents and reports to show the inability of the Colombian government to protect these petitioners against this particular cartel, the Gulf cartel. And in the record, we actually, from 386 to 388, we presented a summary of all the articles and evidence that support that. Also, there's evidence on 392 about the fact that there were killing of social leaders, about 1,000 killings of social leaders.
Okay, so here's the problem that I'm having with respect to your client is that your client was threatened. The IJ finds that your client was persecuted and was persecuted on account of his political activity. Okay, so far so good. But he left the day after they were shot at. And they were contacted by the police and asked whether he would be coming back to Colombia so that the police could investigate, talk to him and investigate this further. He said, no, I'm already in the United States, and that ended it. Why does that show that the government is unwilling or unable to address this kind of persecution?
Thank you. I think that the question about unable is not so much about the particular petitioner position, but the position of the government to provide the protection.
So are you asserting that anyone who is persecuted by the Clan Gulf is entitled to asylum?
No, Your Honor. This is just about this particular.
Okay, but you told me that you didn't want to focus on the particular, that you wanted to focus on something more general. So now I'm really confused as to what we're trying to do here.
I think the particular case, in this particular case, Your Honor, is that one, asking the petitioner to return to Colombia or to remain in Colombia to wait for the government to investigate and continue the process would have put a burden on the petitioner to assume an extraordinary risk after what happened to them. And second, Your Honor, if you notice in the record, there was testimony from the petitioner that even after they left, a person that they knew that he was a social activist was killed by the Gulf cartel.
Yeah, there doesn't seem to be any doubt that the record supports that the Gulf Clan is a particularly nasty group and that they are operating in some parts of Colombia with some impunity. But there's also evidence in the record that the government of Colombia is prosecuting members of the Gulf Clan. I think that the record showed that there were some 109 convictions of members of the Gulf Clan. That doesn't show that the government is either unwilling or unable to address these things. The fact that it doesn't always do so successfully is not evidence of its unwillingness or inability to do so. Your client left the day after he was shot at, and the police got the report And they tried to investigate it by calling him, not realizing that he had already left the country and was in the United States. But if the government is, if the police are following up on this and asking for his assistance, then how does that show that the government is unwilling and unable to do so? How could they be unable to do so if your client left the following day?
You know, I think that the question, you're right, they left right after this happened. But I think that in this particular case, the question is about the ability of the government, the Colombian government, to protect these particular petitioners. So that ability to protect them, although it's diminished by the fact that they left right after the last incident, it has to be coupled with the situation where they first filed and reported the text threats, then nothing happened, then they were shot at.
The police said, you know, we don't know what to do with the information that you've given us. The problem was they had a text that was signed by the Gulf Klan. That's not somebody that the police, I don't know of any police department in the world that could investigate a text that was sent by the Gulf Klan. There was no identified person there. And that's what they told them is, we don't know what to do with this. It didn't show their unwillingness. It was an inability, but that's because of the evidence that they provided. Not because of their inherent inability to address things.
Yes, correct. And again, that goes to the record that we presented, Your Honor, in which the agency, although it's not required to quote every article and to make exact, transfer the evidence as to the general effort of the government, we're talking about a specific group in a specific area where the evidence showed that they were unable to protect someone similar in similar situation. I'm talking about the person that was killed after these petitioners left. So yes, the question is not so much about the willingness of the government to protect them, but not as to the actual ability of the government to protect them. And this record shows that.
What do we know about the incident involving the other person who was killed in terms of what efforts the government there was or was not making as to that person? Because this all happened after your clients left.
Yes, Your Honor. Unfortunately, this happened, I believe it was a few months after the last hearing that we had, in which one of the petitioners testified that this person was killed shortly after the last hearing that we have. So we do not have much information, but that's what we put in the record, and there was nothing else that was asked about that particular issue, Your Honor.
So we don't know what his political affiliation was, the circumstances under which he was killed, whether anything was ever reported to the police, whether the police were ever asked to help him.
Not in this record. We don't know. We don't have more information about that. We know that by the testimony that the petitioner presented, that this person was known to him and that he was known for social activity in the area where they live, and he was found killed after.
What? Hey, counsel, Judge Gould, I'd like to interject a few questions of interest to me. First of all, how do you read the Hussein case?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, which one?
It's Hussain.
Yes, Your Honor, I think I passed that one. I read on that one, but I think that it has to do with the effort that the authorities take into protecting the person. And I think that in this case, simply the report on investigation might demonstrate willingness, but whether those actions are enough to protect the applicant, it should be a separate inquiry.
And I agree that the standard of unable or unwilling or unable, you know, means you have to look at both. But here, even if the government is willing, I'm wondering if they are, even if they're not willing or unwilling, but it's not effective, is it true that they're able to control this clan?
We believe they're not able to control this clan, Your Honor, and this is specific evidence as to the struggle of the Colombian government to control this group. This evidence as to how powerful the Gulf cartel is in Colombia, about how powerful the Gulf clan is in the area where the petitioners live, which is the Department of Antioquia. And also, there's evidence in particular after the remand, we submitted evidence addressed directly to that point, the inability of the government of Colombia to control this group. This is a group that unfortunately has courage in a lot of the areas of the country, and the government is simply unable to protect these petitioners. Yeah.
You want to save some time for rebuttal?
Yes, yeah, thank you.
Okay. Good morning.
Good morning. May it please the court, Sharon Kling on behalf of the government. The Colombian government's response to petitioners' complaints were reasonable under the circumstances, and their failure to prevent the shooting does not demonstrate their inability to control the Gulf clan. Our office reads the case Hussein v. Ruzin as the government's ability to control violence is based on their responsiveness to the threat. And they explained that that generally meant that the government only needed to demonstrate some efforts to subdue a persecutor. In this particular case, we argue that the government did exhibit efforts to pursue the persecutor. The problem was there was a lack of information for them to efficiently do so. So it wasn't their inability to protect him. It was the lack of information to be able to protect him. We also submit that the case does show that there is presence of crime in Colombia and that there is evidence that the Gulf clan has committed some abuses. But getting back to the Hussein case again, the case does not, it doesn't indicate that the presence of crime is how you evaluate the ability to control it. Neither does the prevention of crime or to solve it. Neither of those issues actually says or indicates that they're unable to do it. It's just the reasonable efforts to be made to protect petitioners.
Well, you know, Hussein was a case where there was no reporting, you know, to the authorities, which is obviously different than this. I mean, right. I think the petitioner's, you know, maybe strongest point is just from a catch-22 perspective, you know, he was threatened. He did report it. Granted, it was anonymous, but then 3 weeks later, he was nearly killed in a shootout. And the import of the government's position is that if he's going to wait, if he's going to win on unable or unwilling to protect, he needed to stick around Colombia a little bit longer to see how this would play out. Right. And he did not think that was a good idea.
Right. He didn't avail himself to the protections of the government. I would also like to add, too, that...
But what's the answer to that? You know, I think that's kind of his strongest point, whether it's a legal or an equitable point, I don't know. But I think he's understandably saying, look, the reason I didn't wait around is because I was in fear of my life. And there was a finding of past persecution based on the persecutory conduct itself.
Well, we will submit that it is reasonable for him to feel that way, but it still doesn't establish the government's inability to protect him. The bottom line in this particular case is after the first, after the text messages, the petitioner, like I said, they're anonymous, but one of the problems that that has appeared in some of the case law is that this case, the government didn't take no action. The government did take action to the degree that they were given the appropriate information to do so. But the other thing is that the record shows that there's evidence that actually undermines his claim about the anonymous text. If you look at the police report on page, I think it might be 663, what the police report shows you is that he was not directly threatened with death. What the text message says is that he would be threatened with harm if he didn't follow instructions after he was given a phone call. In other words, what we're proposing is that the catalyst to actually leading to a shooting did not happen. Petitioner testified in court that he did not receive a call or instructions to do anything. And that was the basis for there being the actual death threat in the first place. The other thing in the record that actually undermines his claim is that the wife, actually in her declaration, she stated that they were targeted for extortion. They weren't targeted because of his work as a social leader. Now, while the court did not specifically address those issues in its decision, the court did state that it reviewed the entire record.
But the IJ did make a finding against the government on that. The IJ could have said, yeah, this was for extortion, it's ordinary crime.
Correct.
But didn't, said it was on the basis of politics. So you're bound by that.
Right, exactly.
Did the IJ make any findings about ability to relocate within Colombia?
No, the IJ didn't make any decisions about the ability to relocate. But the record does show that there is an ability to relocate, although they didn't explicitly state
that. Does the record tell us what region of Colombia this was in? Does it give us the city?
The anonymous text occurred in Alexandria. And the shooting actually took place in Medellin, where his mother lives. And one of the questions that we had raised in the record was that the complaints were filed, according to petitioner, in two different offices. The one point he said, I filed this complaint with the police. The other complaint, the shooting, was filed with the public ministry. So there's some question about even whether or not those two agencies were in communication with him. Not to mention the differences in the location. The other thing is that undermining this whole case is that based on that particular information, we don't even know if the groups or the attacks were even related. We don't know if the persons who shot at him were the same persons that actually sent him the text messages. The petitioner testified that the individual was, that the people who shot at him, he couldn't identify. They were wearing dark clothing. It was dark outside. I don't know who they were. And we know that the text messages were anonymous as well.
Yeah. Although both of them were addressed to him, so that he heard people shout his name before they were shot at.
Correct. But they didn't just shout his name. They said, we need you. They didn't say, Sebastian, you're a dead man. They said, Sebastian, we need you. Saying we need you doesn't suggest that they actually intended to.
Well, I don't know. If a cartel says they need you, it's probably not for something good. So
yes,
I guess,
true.
You know, the in preparing for the case, you know, there's a lot of cases. We have a lot of cases in this area. Many of them go for petitioners. You know, I mean, JR, Madrigal, Antonio. I mean, there's a lot of cases in which petitioners are winning on this unable and unwilling to protect theories. So what do you think are the distinguishing features of this case as compared to some of those other ones?
Well, in this particular case, the government didn't have a whole lot of options in terms of assisting the petitioner. This case is distinguishable from Antonio because the government actually showed a reluctance to actually help her. In addition to the reluctance of helping the petitioner in Antonio, the government also allowed for a continuation of mistreatment, and they were aware of who her actual attackers were, and they did nothing to actually alleviate or subdue the continued harassment of the petitioner in that case. JR is distinguishable in a sense that JR is a sort of an extreme case, and it doesn't really deal with inability. It does more with willingness, because in that particular case, the government withdrew protection. They had given him protection for a long period of time, up until the period that he testified in court against the people who attacked him. He had suffered a loss of finger. He had been shot. His son had been killed. And there were all these things that happened. And the judge in the court here actually said that had they continued with the protection, that he probably wouldn't even have had a viable claim, which suggests to me, too, that it's not whether or not you prevent the crime or that you even solve a crime. It's just that the government is only required to make reasonable efforts to try to subdue the
Also, how do you distinguish Madrigal?
I'm not quite, let me see. I did not have that in my notes. I'm not sure, but I am willing to do a 28J letter to distinguish Madrigal in this case, but that's not one of the cases that I relied on when I actually.
Okay. I would welcome seek a 28J letter. Then the reason is that it was my understanding that that Madrigal case said it was legal error for the BIA to look just at country conditions. It showed a government's willingness to control cartel while ignoring facts that showed the government was unable to control.
The legal error to rely on the country condition evidence? Is that what you were saying?
I thought the point was that the country condition evidence, although it could be relied on, showed only willingness to control a cartel and not ability to control them.
The country condition evidence is relevant to the question of the ability to control, but the information that applies directly to petitioner is more instructive about whether or not the government is willing to control. The real major problem with this case is that it's anonymous, and without a particular person to go after or to investigate, then the government is left with no evidence or information to pursue the claim. But in this particular case, the documentary evidence does support the government's claim in the sense that it shows that the Colombian government actively investigates and prosecutes criminal activities committed by the Gulf Clan itself. They've also instituted a whole lot of other protection programs. They've offered assistance for people to protect against the Clan. They've developed policies. They actually just recently came up with a policy to dismantle the Clan. A commission was created to combat crime. There were increased patrols and offered rewards for the arrest of Clan leaders. The government has a policy of total peace where they're trying to achieve a sharp reduction in the lethal violence in the Colombian region. So there's a whole slew of evidence that demonstrates that the Colombian government is willing and able to protect petitioner. But as you have noted, the petitioner did not make himself or avail himself to the protections of the government by leaving immediately after shooting had taken place. And we would suggest that that would be insufficient to demonstrate the inability to protect him. Based on a lack of evidence, lack of information, and the fact that they left. They weren't able to participate in their own defense as they were already in the United States when the phone call came for a formal interview.
Counsel, the reason I asked you about the cities is that in the record, it suggests that the Gulf Clan operates with some impunity in some areas of Colombia. And so I'm wondering whether those reports identify that area as the same area where he was living.
The reports do not identify that area. Actually, they said that out of the 32 death departments in Colombia, they operated in something like 18 of them. So there are many of the departments in Colombia where they're actually not in existence. But the evidence also shows that the Clan doesn't operate in areas where they have a strong government. And there's no evidence in this record to show that the city of Medellin or the city of Alexandria have weak governments where the Clan is able to actually exert its authority or control over the population. In fact, the record actually has a letter from the mayor that's supposed to support petitioner's claim, but the mayor doesn't mention anything about the threats that he faces in Medellin. It just simply stated that it appreciated the fact that he was a social leader, not that he had to, you know, risk his life doing his job doing it. So in that sense, we would argue that the mayor's letter sort of cuts against the idea that that's one of the governments that doesn't have control, or that the Klan actually has a lot of influence or control over the regions that we're actually talking about.
Council.
Yes.
Please. Well, tell me, who has the burden of proof to show an inability to control?
The burden of proof is on petitioner to establish that the Colombia government is unable to control the persecution. And he has failed to meet that burden in this particular case.
Okay, thank you.
In sum, we would just like to submit that based on the anonymity of the text messages, as well as the government's response to the report and their demonstrated ability to protect petitioners, we ask that the court affirm the agency's decision.
Thank you, Ms. Clay. Hey, Mr. Garcon, we'll hear rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honor, as to the question that you had about the area where this happened, on 465, it shows that the Gulf Clan appears in Antioquia, which is the department where these events took place. And Alexandria and Medellin are both cities in this department, which is actually there's a map in the record that shows the map of Colombia and where this department is located, you know.
So you say they operate within that department. Do the country conditions report say they operate with impunity in that department?
Your Honor, that's a good question. I think that it doesn't, the country conditions that we submitted, it mentioned the department of where they, would this happen on 465, and along with the other specific country conditions regarding the Gulf cartel, it indicates that there's some sort of impunity on the operation of this cartel in that area, Your Honor.
But now, Alex, how far is Alexandria from Medellin?
Your Honor, I think that for what I recall, saying the petition is about an hour or two driving from Medellin.
Okay. So and they are in the same department?
They are, yes.
Okay. Now, Medellin is a very large city, maybe the second largest city in Colombia.
Yes,
does the record suggest that the Gulf Clan controls Medellin? That the police are ineffective in Medellin?
No, Your Honor. And that's something that I wanted to clarify. In this record, the testimony was that the shooting happened when the petitioners were driving from Medellin to Alexandria. It didn't happen in Medellin. Mm-hmm. It was in a rural area while they were driving from Medellin to Alexandria after getting supplies from Medellin to the restaurant.
So here's my frustration, counsel. I think this is a very close case. This is a very different from many of the cases that we see. Here's my frustration, is that your client has, goes to the police with a text. There's not much that the police can do with the text when it's signed by the Gulf Clan and not signed by a person. Then they are shot at several weeks later, a terrible incident, and they go to the prosecutor, report that, and then the following day leave for the United States. The prosecutor does follow up. The record has amassed quite a bit of evidence that the Gulf Clan is a very substantial clan, and in some parts of Colombia. So I don't know whether to focus on what happened to your client in particular, all of which seems a little thin. I mean, it's terribly threatening. It would have been very upsetting, but it's very thin. And the police did seem to be responsive. Or am I to focus on the fact that the Colombian government cannot control the Gulf Clan, that they operate with impunity, which suggests maybe a categorical approach to all of this? That is, categorically, if the Gulf Clan decides to come after you, you're going to get asylum because the government can't control them.
Those are two very different approaches to this. One is, you know, highly individualized. The other is far more categorical. And I sort of feel like my head is banging back and forth between those two, and I don't have much to connect them.
Your Honor, and that's precisely what we submitted, that contradiction evidence, because it's something that goes directly to the inability of the Colombian government to protect not only this respondent, but someone similarly situated in that position as what happened with the person that they knew. The part of when they made the police report, when the prosecutor contacted them after they were here, I think it goes more to the willingness of the government to try to protect them. But in reality, the ability of the government under these particular circumstances, given what happened to the respondent, to the petitioners, to what happened to a person that they knew, and also with the specific country conditions, it just reflects that the government is simply unable to protect them. That's our position, Your Honor. Thank you very much, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you. This case is submitted. We thank both counsel for the helpful briefing and argument.